This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
There's a lot of confidence in this room. I think, like I said before, there's a lot of trust in our game. We trust ourselves that we can play a really good game, and we're not going to have it every night. But I think we showed especially the last couple of games, and there was times when we maybe didn't have it as much, but we found a way to get it back, and that was the same thing tonight. And I think that's a sign of a really good team.
Really good team. That's a sign of a 16-0-2 in their last 18 team. That's a sign of a team that was down 3-0 and 4-1 and came back to win in overtime against the defending Stanley Cup champions, and that is, of course, the Nashville Predators. And you just heard from Roman Josi off the top, who, by the way, the tiptoes are getting louder and louder. The footsteps are getting more volume to them as the days and games go on for Roman Josi and Hart Trophy, Roman Josi and Norris Trophy. There he was again in overtime, the hero of the day for Nashville, again. Roman Josi is having an incredible season, and specifically an incredible second half. Welcome to the program. Yes, we're going to talk a lot about Nashville today, but I got a point that I want to make about another candidate that we should consider for the MVP, for the Hart Trophy. We're going to get there in a couple of seconds. Coming up on the program today, we have a really nice one planned for you. By the way, only two games on the go around the NHL this evening. We'll get there in a couple of moments. Arthur Staples is going to stop by from The Athletic. We'll talk about the New York Rangers. Congratulations to the New York Rangers. They are the first team to clinch a playoff spot. And that was a wild game last night with the Philadelphia Flyers and the New York Rangers. The Rangers winning in this one. Adam Fox with the OT win there. Congratulations, Artemi Panarin. You joined the Century Club, getting 100 points. The first since Jaromír Jágr. First Ranger since Jaromír Jágr in 05-06. No John Tortorella post-game again. Over to Bradshaw for that one. Four game-tying goals in the third period in that game. That third period was wild. Now, that is only, for those of you that keep track of things like this, that was only the third time in the history of the NHL. So going back to 1917, that is only the third time in the history of the NHL that we have seen four game-tying goals in the third period. And yes, because I know you asked, or maybe you didn't, you're going to get it anyway. The first time was Washington-Pittsburgh, two lowly teams back then, November 12th, 1975. And then the last time was Chicago-St. Louis. The Norris division. Chicago and St. Louis, March 15th, 1988. Congratulations to the Rangers. The first to clinch a playoff spot. Vancouver squandered their opportunity a day previous. So we're going to talk to Arthur Staple about the Rangers. Also, it's Wednesday, so that means Greg Wyshynski from ESPN and The Drop. He'll stop by for a tour around the NHL. We'll get into the best player conversation. And if we have time, I wouldn't mind parking a conversation with Wish about the top general manager in the NHL this year. We've talked about coach of the year. What about the Jim Gregory? If you're voting right now today, who is the GM of the year? Also, we'll talk to Louis DeBrusque from the NHL on Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada on the Edmonton Oilers and specifically Zach Hyman. You want to talk about overtime heroes? There he was again with goal number 51. Meantime, Matt Marchese kicks it off with me today. Hello, Matty. How are you?
I'm good. I'm a little tired. My eyes are, they were wandering all over the place last night trying to keep track of all the things that were going on. So it's a lot of brain work for the small brain.
You and me both, brother. Don't worry. There was a lot of good last night. Like, there was a lot of fun. There was a lot of wild. There was a lot of nasty. There was a lot of, as we saw with the Ranger game, historic. And there was a continuation of one of the best stories going in the NHL right now, and that is the Nashville Predators and Roman Josi. And before we drill down a little bit more on that, let me remind everybody about something. This has been a wild week if we go back to Saturday for comebacks. Like, Maddie, what have we talked about this year a lot? This is the year of the comeback. No lead is sacred, whether it's one goal, two goals, three goals, or in a lot of cases on the weekend, Saturday, Sunday specifically, four goal leads. And if we rewind to Saturday and we have a look at that St. Louis-Chicago game, San Jose gets out to a 4-0 lead, all right? Zetterlund and Bortolo with two goals apiece. And then the Blackhawks come storming back. Seth Jones with a pair of goals, including the overtime winner. They come down from a four goal deficit. There we go. To win that game. And then Sunday, the Pittsburgh Penguins in Denver go up 4-0 on the Colorado Avalanche. And if you're like me, you're like, holy smokes, wow, what a surprise this is. And then Sean Walker scores, and then the floodgates open. Next thing you know, Jonathan Drouin is burning Chris Letang to the outside, and the comeback is complete. The Colorado Avalanche overcome a 4-goal deficit to win that game. And then last night, with Nashville and Vegas, the defending Stanley Cup champions go up 3-0, and you're saying to yourself, okay, this thing is over, right? Nashville makes it 3-1. Vegas makes it 4-1. And you say, okay, that's it. There's not a chance here, right? Wrong. The Nashville Predators overcome the 3-goal deficit and defeat the defending Stanley Cup champions. All I'm saying, Matty, is in a year where we're talking a lot about comebacks, over the past 4 or 5 days, we've seen some spectacular ones. Most recently, of course, last night between Nashville and Vegas. Your thoughts on all of that?
Well, it is amazing. Like, last night was one of probably the most fun nights on the NHL calendar that we've seen, because there was a lot. Yeah, you talked about being a lot of close games, lead changes, all that stuff. The best part about it was the games that you wanted to be good, they lived up to the hype last night. Because there's so many times where we go through, it's like, you know, I didn't expect Boston and Florida to be a dud. It was great. I didn't expect Nashville and Vegas to be a dud. It was awesome. And they all lived up to the billing. So that was important. The other part is, these are all teams that are gearing up, at least in the important games. They're all gearing up for the playoffs. We saw nastiness with the Winnipeg Jets and the Edmonton Oilers. We saw it with the Bruins and the Panthers. It's just, that is why this part of the season, as long as you have competitive games, and I think they're great. Last night specifically with the Nashville game, I'm watching it and I'm going, you and I were texting and you said, well, Vegas is up 3-0. I'm like, sorry, I'm making banana pancakes. So I'm not going to be able to get to it right away. And then I saw 4-1 and I'm like, okay, I probably got to tune in here because there's something about Nashville and I'm like, they're not going away easy. It's not the game that they played against Dallas just over a month ago where it's like Roman Josi said in his postgame, we could have gone out there and been, it's not our night. They went out, they come back. And then, I don't know if we actually disagreed on this, but I was pretty convinced that when Vegas challenged for offside, that they were going to win that challenge. I was basically convinced to the point where I said, well, this game's going to be 4-2. I can change the channel. Turn back 4-3, and then they end up scoring on the power play. Did you think, like, you were not as convinced as I was, clearly, that it was offside?
Not as convinced. At best, I'd give it a 50-50, flip them and pick them. But I was not as convinced as you were that this thing was going to go against the Nashville Predators and it was going to go back to 4-2. I thought that, okay, there's a good chance this thing's going to be onside. Forsberg scores a goal, and all of a sudden we have a game here. Oh, by the way, just as an aside, how much did you have a laugh at as we found out what Ryan O'Reilly calls his two wingers?
I didn't hear that. That's the one thing I missed.
So Ryan O'Reilly is playing with Gustav Nyquist and Philip Forsberg, top line for the Nashville Predators. You know what he calls them?
What's that?
His Swedish meatballs.
Which are delicious.
I don't know why that made me laugh so much last night, but him calling his wingers the Swedish meatballs, I thought was just delightful. You know what this sort of leads into in some ways, and maybe you want to have a whack at this pinata. I got to give it a little more brain energy here in a couple of seconds. Maybe it's a good conversation for Wish coming up an hour or two. If you were going to pick a general manager of the year, that's a Jim Gregory Award, who would it be right now? Jim Nill won it last year with the Dallas Stars. I think you can make a case.
He can win it every year
the way he's going, the way that scouting and development staff is working, like all of a sudden, like Jim Nill's looking real good for a lot of years here. I think you can make a case for Don Waddell and Daniel Briere and Kevin Cheveldayoff and Chris Drury, Bill Zito. Vancouver would be interesting because you give it to Patrick Alvin, who technically is the general manager, although we all know how he works in concert with Jim Rutherford, more close than loose. And the other one would be Barry Trotz, general manager of the Nashville Predators. And do you think I'm missing any candidates there?
It's funny that you say that because the name that I had thought of, and he won't win it, but it's so interesting because they've had such a turnover over the last few years, is... maybe he shouldn't. I don't know. Let me think about this one.
Okay. I know. I'm just dropping this in. On your lap in the middle of nowhere.
No, I know. But it's just I'm trying to think if it's even worth the Julian Brisebois. They have had so much turnover on that team. He has traded away everything. All the picks, we don't need them. You can have them. They're going to have to make a decision on Steven Stamkos. Andre Vasilevsky was out for a large portion of the beginning of the season, and they're going to make the playoffs again. And they've done a great, the additions that they've made, guys that they've brought in. And this is kind of over the course of a few years for Julian Brisebois, because they brought in, the Brandon Hagels and the Nick Pauls. But then at the deadline, a guy that you and I talked about that's been great for them was Anthony Duclair. They also brought in Matt Dumba.
Oh, yeah.
It's for him, it would be more like a not quite lifetime achievement award, but everybody, and you, I certainly did, and I'm pretty sure you did at one point, at least recently, that the Tampa Bay Lightning, they're going to fall off a cliff at some point. And maybe that speaks more to John Cooper's candidacy for Jack Adams than it does Julian Brisebois for the Jim Gregory Award. But I just think he's at least in the conversation, maybe not for this year, but it's just an interesting look at that award and how, it could be somebody off the wall. It does, but Barry Trotz for me is probably the guy, Jeff.
Yeah, to me, Kevin Cheveldayoff, I think Winnipeg.
Sure.
On how they both cleaned out the room, won at least one significant trade, and also re-signed the goaltender and the number one center.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, let me get here now before we go over more of the games from last night. And you're right, there were some doozies. So I got a note from someone this morning. I am not going to say where this person is from, other than this person is not from Winnipeg.
Okay.
Okay? So here's a note I got this morning. Is Connor Hellebuyck getting enough Hart Trophy love?
No.
Second in goals against. Now, when it comes to goals against, with all due respect, that's a team stat. That's not a goaltending stat, so throw that one away. First in save percentage and top three in wins for goalies. Not to mention the leading point scorer on the Jets only has 64 points.
Huh.
We all know where the Jets would be where they are today, and no one expected them to be. I thought it was pretty interesting because the point leader is Scheifele. With the point leading scorer, Mark Scheifele, is 59 points behind Nathan MacKinnon and Nikita Kucherov. Another fun note on this one. If you look at goaltenders who have won the Hart Trophy, and by the way, I think that by the very definition of the Hart Trophy itself, most valuable to their team, I would almost make the argument, and some years I do, that a goalie should win this thing every year.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, I digress. A lot of people say, they have the Vezina.
So?
Doesn't say anything about a goalie not being eligible here. Doesn't matter. Goalies can be eligible for the Lady Bing as well. I'm going to talk about Marc-Andre Fleury if you want me to about the Lady Bing. Another fun note, getting back to this note. Another fun note on this. When Dominik Hasek won the Hart in 1997, the leading point scorer on that Buffalo Sabres team had 53 points.
Yuck.
Then in 98, when Hasek won the Hart again, the leading point scorer on the team had 46 points.
Ugh.
Then when Jose Theodore won the Hart in 2001-2002, the leading point scorer on the team had 56. Then when Carey Price won the Hart in 14-15, leading point scorer on the team had 67. Coincidence, Jeff? I think not.
It's pretty good.
Are we not paying enough attention to Connor Hellebuyck for the Hart Trophy? Roman Josi, that momentum continues. Kucherov's well told, McDavid, Nathan MacKinnon, etc. But hey, Austin Matthews, throw him into the mix as well. What about Connor Hellebuyck?
Well, when you lay it out like that, Jeff, yes, we are not talking enough about Connor Hellebuyck for the Hart Trophy. He has been, he has been from start to this point now, the best goalie in the NHL. And there have been goalies that have maybe had better stretches at their highest point than Connor Hellebuyck has had this year. Small stretches, but there has been no goaltender that has been as consistent as Connor Hellebuyck, who also, I might add, has more of a workload than a lot of goalies. Right? Like that kind of goes without saying. I think that plays into it as well. Like, okay, you want to give the goalie, have a goalie who plays 50 games Hart Trophy consideration? No. You can't do that. I don't think you can do that. But when you look at, you know, a goalie that plays 60-plus games, I think now we're in that territory. I think that is the biggest factor as to why people don't vote for goalies. Because do you have the Hasek years offhand or the Jose Theodore year offhand of how many games that they played those years? Because that, for me, would be, like, the game has changed so much. But that's the conversation, I think, is do they play enough? It's the same argument. And I know on this station, they had it the other day. Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker had because Jeff Blair has voted for Greg Maddux for MVP in the past, and Barker thinks he's nuts. Because also he was a position player, so he doesn't want to give any credence to, you know, pitchers being more important. But it's about how many games that they are directly involved in. And I can see the argument, but when you're as good as Connor Hellebuyck has been, and when you lay it out that this is not a team that scores a lot of goals, so there's a lot more pressure on the goaltender in Winnipeg than there is in, say, Edmonton or Toronto. Oh, Toronto's probably a bad example because there's always pressure on the goalie there. But like Edmonton or Colorado, teams like that, I think that's what the defining thing is in Connor Hellebuck's candidacy, for me anyway.
By the way, the person that wrote me this note, when he played, was not a goaltender.
Okay.
So don't think that that's is goalie bias. That is the one clue I will give you on this person.
That's good.
Not a goaltender. Anyway, just food for thought. Do with that what you will. Washington Capitals. Overtime victory over the Detroit Red Wings. So the Red Wings still pick up a point. Washington picks up two. Dylan Strome with a pair of goals, including the OT winner. On a scale of 1 to 10, you know, we always talk about not cheering for teams but cheering for people. Dylan Strome might be right up around the top for me. The entire Strome family might be right up around the top for me. Really happy for Dylan Strome. His 24th and 25th goal of the season yesterday for the Washington Capitals, where he's really found a home. And I think we're looking at the schedule and saying, oh, man, it's going to be tough for the Caps, but they just keep on winning games, Matt Marchese.
Yeah.
They keep on winning games.
Yeah, and in a way that, I mean, you know, if you have a minus goal differential with a plus win record getting into the playoffs, I mean, that is a pretty impressive feat. But they're doing it on
when
the back.
When they lose,
it's bad.
They lose big.
Yeah.
When they lose big. That's why.
I mean, Charlie Lindgren has been a great story, as we know. You talked yesterday with Tarik El-Bashir about the job that Spencer Carberry has done, not only dealing with the young guys, but dealing with the veterans too. And this is kind of that, it's an interesting mix because there's a lot of veteran guys on this Capitals team, but it's the younger guys or young-ish guys that they need more from. The veteran guys are kind of, you know, they're older, and, you know, I saw Ovechkin yesterday, and I have all the respect in the world for Alex Ovechkin. He is absolutely managing his time on the ice, and I can appreciate that. He is kind of just like, when I need to go, I'm going to go, but if I don't need to go, I'm kind of just here. It's kind of like me in this chair, actually. When I'm here, I'm here. I think Spencer Carberry's done a fantastic job with the group. Like I said, Charlie Lindgren's been a great story. That game, for whatever reason, I'm not rooting for the Capitals, but there's part of me that is like, I would love to see what this team can do playing this style in the playoffs. Like, they're not an easy out right now. I don't know that you want to play them the way that they're going right now. And on the flip side, they're not as good as some of the other teams, but they can. And the one thing that they don't score enough that they would be a worry, but they can play well enough defensively that they've locked down some pretty decent teams.
So if they lock up that second wild card spot, okay, here's the thing I think you need to consider. If they lock up that second wild card spot, and I know that technically they could lock up third in the Metropolitan, but let's just say that it ends like this right now for Washington. You are either going to play, well, right now you would be playing the New York Rangers, okay?
Yep.
So you're going to be playing, if you're that second wild card, you're going to be playing one of these four teams. You're either going to be playing the Rangers or the Hurricanes, the Panthers, or the Boston Bruins. Do you like Washington in any of those matchups? Or is just getting there a good enough story for Washington?
Oh, getting there is a good enough story for Washington. I don't think that they're going to win a first-round series, but I don't think it's going to be easy. Like, it will be difficult for a team to, you know, try. They're not getting swept. I mean, that doesn't really happen anymore anyway. But I don't think that they're getting swept. I honestly, I've been counting them out all year, and they've been in and around the playoff picture
all
year. Yeah. Now, I did want to, on the flip side, talk about not playing with confidence. So Alex DeBrincat does score yesterday. He snaps, I think it was a 13-game goalless streak.
Yeah.
But in overtime, Jeff, I saw a little bit of a crisis of confidence in Alex DeBrincat, which ended up leading to the game-winning goal. He's on a 2-on-1, and he's on his offside. It's absolutely a shooting position for Alex DeBrincat, and he just tries to pass it across. No confidence. He ends up banging his stick against the boards after in frustration. Like, he's having nightmares over that one, because that is one of the best, one of the better pure shooters in the NHL, who has a great opportunity in overtime in a big spot, and he passes it up. Something that if he had, you know, scored maybe 4 goals over that stretch, we're having a different conversation today.
Yeah.
But I saw the crisis of confidence for that split second in Alex DeBrincat yesterday, which is kind of tells you where the Red Wings are and kind of where the Capitals are at this particular moment in time.
Yeah. We're up against the clock here, so I want to get as much of this in as possible. Good news story yesterday. Fun story yesterday. Ignore all the haters about, oh, look at the arena it's in, and there's no fans, and this is a joke. Congratulations to Josh Doan. Congratulations to the Doan family. Not just the NHL debut of Josh Doan, second-round draft pick of the Arizona Coyotes. Went to ASU, born in Scottsdale, a full-blooded Arizonan. 2 goals, including, we should mention, during his NHL debut, 6-2 over the Columbus Blue Jackets, but the downer in that one for the Coyotes is last night they were officially eliminated from the playoffs. But nonetheless, do you have a thought on Josh Doan? First game, 2 goals. Pretty outstanding.
Pretty good. Dad in the crowd. The guy next to him even took off his shirt, which Shane Doan thought was pretty funny. The post game,
big dude.
Yeah, big dude. That's an understatement. And then the post game where the name eludes me, but usually he hands out the first goal puck to the player. But in this case, he says, "I'm not touching it." And then Shane Doan gives it to him. I thought it was a great moment. And on the broadcast, they made mention, and other people, I think, who were in the building talked about how loud it was for Josh Doan. Like, even while he was on the ice, like, the arena was really buzzing. And I've heard a lot about, you know, how good the atmosphere is. And again, the jokes are there about the size of the arena and all that. But it was an interesting dynamic, because it felt like, when I'm listening to the broadcast and listening to the crowd, it's a small rink. He's a hometown kid. It felt like everybody knew him. And that's something that you are probably never going to get again, because hopefully they're playing in a much bigger arena and it's not the same. But it did feel like, in some weird roundabout way, it felt like community hockey, which was kind of cool, kind of weird. Huh. But at the same time, it was really nice, because it really did feel like everybody in the building knew Josh Doan and grew up with Josh Doan.
Well, I mean, he's a Scottsdale guy. He was always around the rink when, you know, Dad was working with the Arizona Coyotes organization. Now Shane Doan, of course, works with the Toronto Maple Leafs organization. Born and raised in Scottsdale, went to ASU, drafted by the Coyotes in the second round. He is the local kid. He's the one that's always been around that rink, and he's the one drafted by the team, and we'll see where that squad ends up. Another story for another day. Todd Walsh, by the way, is the in-house reporter for the Arizona Coyotes. Long time. He's been doing that for like 17 years. Todd's been there forever. Okay, a couple of more things real quick before we wrap up. You mentioned Boston, Florida.
Yeah.
And that one was nasty early. Now, I always wonder, you can tell the playoffs are coming up, because, and especially with two teams who, you know, have a pretty good chance of facing off against each other at some point in the playoffs again, but obviously the fumes from last year still have some fire to them. The Florida Panthers and the Boston Bruins. Now, 4-3 is the final. Congratulations, David Pastrnak, who, much like Artemi Panarin last night, hit the century mark. Congratulations to him. When players do things that you don't normally expect them to do, mm-hmm. or things that are contrary to, oh, I don't know, their own good health, you say, okay, we must be getting close to the playoffs. I still have no idea why Hampus Lindholm, as he's tied up with Sam Bennett, would throw a left out of nowhere. Whereas looking like it was just going to be two guys just jostling, all of a sudden, bam, this left comes out of nowhere from Hampus Lindholm, and Sam Bennett goes, okay, I guess it's on.
Yeah, I'm watching it. So you mentioned the shot that he gave, because I said that the reason why I said Sam Bennett did Hampus Lindholm dirty was it was like he was, you know, the movies about high school where the guy's getting held underwater at the toilet, getting a swirly. That's kind of what it felt like. It was what Sam Bennett did holding his head down was that was kind of disrespectful. Like, I'm going to just stand over you and I'm going to make you look like a wimp. And I think that's where Hampus Lindholm was. Like, I think pride took over in that moment. And then once he threw the left, he probably realized, like, uh-oh, I think I got to do something about this because this guy's not going to back down here. And then, I mean, it didn't turn into much. It was more of a wrestling match than anything.
Yeah.
But you are absolutely right. Even the Brad Marchand and Nico Mikkola battle in front of the net, I'm watching.
Large man.
Like, that's got to be one of the biggest height differences in a fight that we've seen in a long time. And it's just, it's like you said, they're out of time. They're both jockeying for position in the Atlantic. There's a lot of nastiness. Talk about, you know, the late winner. Boston was down. They come back. They score the quick goals. And you're going, okay, Boston means business here. It was a really good hockey game. It was nasty. And that's what I'm saying. Like, the games now, as we get closer, you can feel, like, the tension in the building because we're getting closer. And that's what I love about it. I thought that game was fantastic. And Boston, you know, they get the win last night. Doesn't get much easier tonight going to play the Tampa Bay Lightning. Here you go. Remember when the trip through Florida? Now, this was a while ago. The trip through Florida was just like,
easy 4 points, Yeah.
It was kind of like the trip through California for a bit. It's like, oh, this is fine. Yeah. This is easy. And now it's
Florida trip was always, you're going to get a tan and you're going to get 4 points.
And you might even play some golf.
Florida. Those days are long gone. You might get some golf in, some time at the beach as well. The one thing that I want to point out in this one is, as we talk about, as we end up the schedule here, kind of a smaller story, but it's a former first-round draft pick. In 2016, that would have been the Buffalo draft. That would have been the Austin Matthews draft. The Boston Bruins, with pick number 29... took Trent Frederick.
Mm-hmm.
Now, many teams had Trent Frederick probably second round. Maybe some had him getting, you know, falling down to as late as the third. And I remember asking someone from the Bruins table afterwards why they took Frederick so high. And this person said to me, well, we had intel that Anaheim was going to take him at 30. We were hoping we could maybe get him in the second round, but there wasn't going to be a chance for that because Anaheim was going to take him at 30. They ended up taking Sam Steele after Frederick went to Boston from the Regina Pats. So Trent Frederick, I've always been interested in. St. Louis guy, tough player, not shy, teammates love him. I can still remember every time Boston would play Washington, Frederick would always try to fight Tom Wilson.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden now, Trent Frederick scored his 18th goal of the season yesterday.
Yep.
Like, I know this isn't like Zach Hyman scoring 50. I get it. But Trent Frederick's got a career high at 18 goals. And he plays a very much Boston Bruins style of game and isn't shy about any encounter or any face-off with anybody in the NHL. I know, Maddie, it's a tiny little note, but Trent Frederick's got 18 goals this year. You know, I mentioned a couple of seconds ago, Dylan Strome's got 25 goals. Trent Frederick's got 18 goals this year. I think that's pretty cool for the Boston Bruins. I really do.
That's the most goals that he scored at any level, including college, the AHL, and the USHL in one season. And granted, I know you play less games in college and at the USHL level, but last time I checked, the NHL is much harder. And
harder league.
Yeah, the fact that he's not afraid of anything is great. He's also got positional flexibility. They can play him up the middle. They can play him up the wing. And he's one of those. You talk about playing the Boston Bruin way. He's a guy that you just don't like playing against.
He's a guy.
You don't like playing against guys like that. I think he's been a great addition to this team. And the fact that he's found some offense in a year where, and I know it's been well documented about losing David Krejci and Patrice Bergeron, although the centers have done a great job offensively, having that added firepower makes a big deal. So he's been great.
he's a Boston Bruins style guy. He's tough, not shy. He'll fight. He's got 18 goals. And, you know, I was reminded last night watching the Bruins, and I know they're on the road right now, but thinking about the old Boston Garden and thinking about a player like Trent Frederick, my favorite sign, or maybe one of my favorite signs, that probably is my favorite sign, at the old Boston Garden, Matty, there used to be a fan who would bring this one specific sign to the games at the old Garden and put it up on the wall. And this is like the big bad Bruins era, you know, they're winning Stanley Cups and, you know, they got elite, you know, Hall of Famers, Bobby Orr, Phil Esposito, et cetera, on the team. But a real tough, like rug. We all know about the Boston Bruins from the 70s. And this one fan would bring a sign that said, Lady Bing died at the Garden. And I always thought, ooh, how much of a Boston sign is that?
That or
Lady
in Philly.
Lady Bing died at the Garden. That or in Philly, yeah. I always thought that was one of the more creative
signs. That's pretty good.
In the history of the NHL, folks, Lady Bing died at the Garden. Okay, on that, we'll wrap up. We're going to get on the New York Rangers page here in a couple of moments with Arthur Staple. It's still to come. Greg Wyshynski, top of the hour for MVSW Redux. And Louis DeBrusque on Zach Hyman, who now has 51, but who's counting? And the Edmonton Oilers, big one last night against the Winnipeg Jets. All that still to come on the Merrick Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet 360 and wherever you get your podcasts. Back in a moment.
Everything you need to know about the Blue Jays, Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. And as we mentioned at the top of the show, congratulations to the New York Rangers, the first team to clinch a playoff spot officially. And congratulations to Artemi Panarin, who joins the Century Club, recording his 100th point last night in a wild game between the New York Rangers and the Philadelphia Flyers, as we mentioned off the top as well. How many ties did we see in that game? How many game-tying goals? 4 in the third period. That is only the third time that has happened in the history of the NHL. To sharpen the pencil even more on the New York Rangers, our good friend Arthur Staple from The Athletic joins me now. Arthur, how are you today, pal?
I'm good, Jeff. How you doing?
I'm well. Thanks so much for this one. So the Rangers clinch. I mean, no surprise. All these teams are going to clinch. Vancouver squandered one two nights ago, but, you know, they'll clinch. What do you make of, you know, now that it's official, based on your expectations of the Rangers coming into the season, what do you make of this? I mean, I don't know that you were one of the people that said at the beginning of the year the Rangers will be the first team to clinch a playoff spot in the NHL, but here we are. What do you make of the team so far?
You know, I think it's an achievement. I would dare say they've been overachieving given their roster and some of the specific spots that were question marks going into the season. You know, they didn't make many big splashes in free agency. They didn't have a lot of cap space. It was a lot of over 30 recognizable names, veteran guys. And you see the contributions made by guys like Erik Gustafsson, who's bounced around a lot. Jonathan Quick, I think, has been kind of low-key one of their MVPs, who was really strong all year, especially when Igor Shesterkin wasn't at his best. And then you look at you know, the incredible run that Peter Laviolette has had in all his different stops, where he gets off to these great starts for either whether it's his system that's easily adaptable, or the team building, or some combination of all these factors. I don't think anybody would have predicted 18-4-1 for this team coming out of the gate, but their stars have been excellent for most of the year. Igor Shesterkin's back to being Igor Shesterkin. Adam Fox, same. Artemi Panarin, like you mentioned, 100 points. He's been probably their most valuable player this year. So it's all kind of come together. And I think maybe a little bit, a little bit of the morass of the Metro division, where nobody, you know, outside of them in Carolina, nobody's been really top notch. I think that's helped them too. They've gotten first early in the year, and they've stayed there the whole time. And it didn't feel inevitable. After a while, it does, obviously, playoffs and things like that. But it's been an impressive season so far.
When you look at Artemi Panarin, he's one of my favorite players to talk about. It seems as if no matter where Panarin goes, like if you have someone who, you know, needs a shot in the arm, someone whose game needs a course correction, if you need someone to bring out the most in another player, and the most recent example, of course, is Alexis Lafreniere with the Rangers here, all you do as a head coach is you put them next to Artemi Panarin. That's what it looks like. I mean, you're there for all the games, all the practices, etc. What is it about Artemi Panarin? What is the it factor that he has?
You know, he loves to joke around and kind of deflect attention at times when he's talking to the media or just in general. Looks like he's having a good time all the time. But I think the work ethic is really second to none, and he makes it look easy, just the amount of work he puts in. And you see this past offseason, you know, he had a disappointing first round, as a lot of Rangers did in the loss to the Devils last spring. Mm-hmm. Wanted to become more of an attacker, more of a shoot first guy. To, you know, everybody knows about the passing skills, but you know, he's up in the top 10 in shot attempts. He's over 500 attempts already this year. He's made at his age, 31, 32, he's made an effort to become a different sort of player, to make sure defenses can't key on him, where he maybe got stuck in that coming down the off wing wall and stopping and surveying. Now he's much more of a threat to score. You know, if he has a little bit of a run here and over the last 10, he could get to 50. And that's a big number in Rangers land. Not many guys have done that. And like you said, you know, Alexis Lafreniere, Vincent Trocheck, guys that maybe you thought wouldn't mesh well with him. It was Philip Hedel before he got hurt at the beginning of the year. When he's on, I don't think he's one of those guys that's tough to play with. I think he's just, his motor is always running. John Tortorella the other day said there's no better player tired in the league than Artemi Panarin. He uses every ounce of energy in every shift and can go a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. I think it just helps everybody the way that he's been playing.
You know, when you look at Vincent Trocheck and the season that he's had, like, I think you're right. I think you pin a lot of it on the performance of Artemi Panarin. But, you know, if at the beginning of the year, you know, Arthur, we said, you know, we're going to talk on March 27th and Vincent Trocheck's going to have more points than Mika Zibanejad, and there won't be an injury for either one of them that will factor into either one of it, I think we both would have said, yeah, no chance that's happening. The fact that Trocheck has put up more points than Zibanejad, is that more of a comment on, you know, the player from Pittsburgh or the player from Sweden?
You know, I think it's much more on Trocheck. He's been... You know, he played a lot with Panarin last year, Trocheck's first year with the Rangers. It didn't always work. And like we said, you know, as we kind of mentioned, maybe Panarin has altered his game enough this year to kind of be able to mesh with whoever. Trocheck is, you know, he's a kind of a 1A Zibanejad. You know, he's a guy who does a lot of little things. He's on the top power play. He's the second center over the boards in the PK behind Zibanejad. He's been dominant in the faceoff circle. He was up over 60% for a lot of the year. He's a guy who does a lot of little things that aren't necessarily noticed, and I think he's got enough skill to keep up with guys like Panarin and Lafreniere. And I think that's how you end up with 70, 75 points. You know, I don't know that he's ever been looked at as a guy who could be the guy to carry the load as a center on any team that he's been on, whether it's been Florida or Carolina. But the way that he plays, another guy with a motor that doesn't quit, has a little bit of an edge when you get into playoff time, or he likes to get under people's skin, and clearly has the skill to keep up. And, you know, we talk Mika Zibanejad as the number one center, so we just assume that line with Chris Kreider and whoever's on the right is the top line, and the Trocheck, Panarin, Lafreniere line is the second line. But in terms of usage, that is not true this year. Those guys have been driving the bus, time on ice, offense, the whole deal at 5-on-5. They've been clearly the best line for the Rangers, and they need to keep it going.
You know, it was, I want to circle to Igor Shesterkin here for a second, Arthur, and, you know, as weird as this may sound, I remember going to, like, All-Star Weekend was in Toronto this year, and I remember going to the Saturday games and, you know, watching Igor Shesterkin and wondering to myself, as odd as this may sound, I wonder if this All-Star break and just the way that he was playing could help to turn around his season. And again, this is only my nickel and dime observation. It seems to have done that because post All-Star, it's been a different Shesterkin. Has he commented on any of that about what that break and even just like normally like a goaltender and an All-Star, you're just trying not to get injured because you're the only player that's competing hard at these things. But has he made any comments about what that All-Star break, albeit one that he played in, meant to him?
I think it was the time around it. You know, I think All-Star Weekend, he's been around, you know, he was at one before, and I think he understands what it's about. You don't have to put a lot of attention on yourself. He doesn't love the spotlight in terms of media and things like that. But I think the ability to take a breath in that longer week, even if it includes being in the kind of the mecca of the NHL with a bunch of superstar players who are sure. trying to, you know, clown you a little bit on the ice in the skills competition and in the game. I think he's learned to kind of turn his brain off a little bit during that time. And Laviolette factors in too. They gave him a little bit of time. He didn't play the last game before the break. He didn't play the first game out of the break. So it ended up being about a 12-day reset for him. And I think since then, since February, whatever his first game back, it's, you know, he's been second to none really in the league in terms of goals saved above expectation, in terms of performance. And really, if you look at some of the team defense numbers, they haven't been much better in terms of expected goals against at 5-on-5 than they were when the team was struggling and Shesterkin was struggling. So his play, Jonathan Quick's mm-hmm. play, has become really heightened in the last couple of months in terms of them leading the way. And I think it's just a reminder, probably a reminder to Shesterkin too, about how important he is to this team's success going forward and being able to, you know, translate it into the playoffs. I think the next step for him is you look back to their run to the conference final. He got pulled twice in that series in Pittsburgh in games 3 and 4 before yeah. the Rangers came back to win. And that was not a great goaltending series for anybody. And he was outplayed by Akira Schmid against the Devils last year. So I think for him, the next challenge in these next 10 games, not just to get a few starts in and be sharp, but mentally to focus on getting out of the gate strong, because in the NHL, if you're, no matter what kind of favorite you are, I think we all know it, in the first round, if you're not on your game as a goalie, and certainly as a goalie is important as Shesterkin, you can end up going home pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. We've seen it countless times. Let me ask you about the back end. Considering all the injuries, and this is a blue line that has been decimated, whether it's, you know, Trouba or Lindgren or Gustafsson, an interesting blue line right now. Are we seeing just how important Zach Jones is and how important Zach Jones can be to this back end for the New York Rangers?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, last night was, he kind of stepped up in weight class to pair with Adam Fox, and they were, you know, I think they had the most minutes 5-on-5, and there were a couple of pretty big breakdowns. So I think, you know, his ceiling is not where you'd hope it would be. I mean, he's certainly still very young in terms of games played, he's extremely young. So, but I think the way that he's filled in on the third pair, especially since they got Chad Ruedel, who's, you know, a guy who is what he is and has been for a long time, a good 6, 7, 8 guy. I think if you have enough of those guys, and they really haven't had enough of those guys in the past couple of years, you know, you see a undrafted kid like Brandon Scanlon make his debut last night and, you know, was capable enough, but there's not a lot of depth there in this organization. So a guy like Jones is hugely important when there's injuries, you know, and it also, just the way that they've played this year, it buys them some time now where the priority is getting Ryan Lindgren and Jacob Trouba healthy and getting now Erik Gustafsson healthy. And you give Jones a chance to get a real run of games and get a little confidence. Mm-hmm. Maybe last night was a little bit of a dent in that confidence, but at least you know that when the playoffs come around, if you need your seventh or eighth guy, he can step in because he's just played 15 or 20 games and he really hasn't had that experience the last couple of years. So, he's been important. I think the addition of Ruedel was important. I think you go back to the start of the year, you know, as I said, July 1, signing Erik Gustafsson to a, you know, an under $1 million deal. This was a guy who was carrying the load on the power play at the point when Adam Fox missed 10 games in November. So yeah. It's been a lot of kind of around the margins moves between Chris Drury and Peter Laviolette that I think have helped them and will help them as they get into the postseason.
Let me conclude with a question about the Colts' hero, and that is Matt Rempe. What is the latest now with the Matt Rempe story? It seems as if, you know, post-suspension, things seem, correct me if I'm wrong here, a little quieter, as quiet as they can be around someone who's 6'8", but a little bit quieter around Matt Rempe right now?
Yeah, I think he's learning to settle in, and I think he probably would have kept on scrapping with anybody who asked, or if he was asking anybody, but I think that's what you have veterans around you for, and that's what you have a veteran coach for, and a veteran coaching staff to kind of remind them that the reason he got called up is not to be a sideshow, that they would love to have a guy who's 6'8", who can get around the ice a little bit, who is willing to throw the body on the forecheck, and is going to get, you know, 6 to 8 to 10 shifts a game and try to make the most of them and not get tossed out or have all the other shenanigans go on, I guess you could call them.
Right.
And he's still really young. You know, he seems like he's on a journey as a hockey player that started not that long ago, because he's so tall and having to kind of learn to use his body and control his body. And really the malice, if no one can really say there's any malice behind the hit that brought the suspension. It certainly was a suspendable hit, but it really looked like a very big guy who's not completely in control of himself on the ice. And I
sloppy
think there's
play.
Something there.
Sloppy
though.
Play. It,
yeah. Yeah. Sloppy play by a young kid who doesn't quite understand how you need to hit, how you react to guys in the NHL who move a lot faster than guys in the Western League or in the AHL. So I think it's a learning process for him. I don't know that we'll see a lot of him in the playoffs, but I would imagine that even if he doesn't start a series, and certainly last night, Rangers Flyers, you see a lot of guys in that Philly team that play with an edge. If that's the first round matchup, I think you might see Matt Rempe in uniform for at least a few games, because he is a bit of not just a deterrent. I don't really love that word, but he's a guy that does make defensemen think twice when they go back to get the puck. And that's really, that's the role of every good fourth line, to crash and bang and make sure you take a piece out of a defenseman when they go back to get a puck. So on that front, I think he's doing his job, and I don't know if he'll get to do it in the playoffs, but if he does, there's about 18,000 people at the Garden that'll be super happy that he gets to.
Mm. I think it is a lot of people are just wondering, will he be there still on April the 3rd when the Rangers face off against the New Jersey Devils again? I think that's one of the dates that people are hoping that Rempe's still in the lineup. Arthur, on that we'll wrap. Thanks as always for stopping by, sharing your expertise on the New York Rangers. Much appreciated from this end.
You got it, Jeff. Anytime. Thanks.
There is Arthur Staple, who covers the New York Rangers for The Athletic. Yesterday, the first team to clinch officially a playoff spot by beating the Philadelphia Flyers in a really wild game, a wild third period with 4 game-tying goals. Again, only the third time in NHL history that has happened. Time now for Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook, Bet Local. Maddie, only 2 to choose from tonight. It is a pretty quiet night around the NHL, so drill down on 1. What game is that?
It'll be the Bruins at the Lightning. Puck line is Lightning -1.5. Bruins are 7-3 straight up in their last 10 against the Lightning. The over has hit in 4 of the last 5 Bruins games and 7 of the last 9 Lightning games.
So in this one, as we just mentioned, the New York Rangers first to clinch a playoff spot yesterday. The Boston Bruins, if they get 1 point, so just get this thing into overtime or win in regulation, the Boston Bruins would be the second team to clinch a playoff spot officially in the NHL. As Maddie and I talked about off the top of the show, the Bruins played last night a very physical affair against the Florida Panthers. What do they have left tonight against a Tampa Bay Lightning team that's 6-0-1 in their last 7? Like, let's be honest here. You know what's really been kind to the Florida Panthers? March. They have been remarkable in March, picking up 15 points. And this is one of those games where the Boston Bruins had a really tough one last night against the Florida Panthers. Meanwhile, the Tampa Bay Lightning have had a couple of days off to rest up and heal up. And don't look now, but Braden Point is back. Victor Hedman is back as well. Tampa Bay also boasts Anthony DeClaire. We've talked about him a lot. 9 points in his last 7 games. Looks like Vasilevsky versus Ullmark in this one. And don't look now as we talk about players that have interesting goal totals. 41 goals so far for Nikita Kucherov. Duh. Also 41 goals for Braden Point. very quietly. We don't talk a lot about him. Nonetheless, look forward to this one tonight. That's Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local. Greg Wyshynski is next. MVSW time across the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360. Back in a moment.
Covering the Raptors in depth like no one else. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. Big overtime win last night for the Edmonton Oilers. Zach Hyman, the hero there with his 51st goal of the season, defeating the Winnipeg Jets. Here for comments on this and perhaps the Boston-Florida game as well, as our good friend Louis DeBrusque from the NHL on Sportsnet at Hockey Night in Canada. Louis, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Jeff. How are you doing, bud?
I'm doing well. I don't know how much or if at all, or maybe you watched the whole thing. Did you watch much of Florida and Boston last night?
I haven't. I was getting updates from my wife, though. Cindy was filling me in, but
okay.
A lot of times on game days when a game starts really close to mine, I'll check in. People will give me updates, but I don't pay too much attention because yes. I tend to get a little distracted. So, but that's, I heard it was,
I think we all understand
as we expected.
Yes.
I heard it was spicy. As we expected.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's going
it
to
was,
get even more spicy.
Here's my thought on this one. I was hoping. I mean, listen, you played. You know a lot better than I do. Last night's Boston Florida game was the first time it felt to me like the playoffs are close. And there was one moment specifically where I really felt the playoffs are close, because something happened in this game last night. And it's a small thing, but something happened in the game last night that I could see happening on March 26th that I couldn't see happening on November 26th. So Sam Bennett and Hampus Lindholm are tied up. And out of nowhere, Hampus Lindholm throws a phantom left. And I said to myself, I don't think he does that in November, but he'll do that in late March. These are things you need to do to get yourself ready for the playoffs. And, like, look, Sam Bennett grabbed him, threw him down, held it. Like, it didn't end well for Hampus Lindholm as expected. But, and then we had Brad Marchand going at Nico Mikkola and, like, trying to, you know, punch the giant in the face. I get it. But it was the first game that I looked at. And maybe it's because of the history between the two teams and they're in the same division. But it was the first time, Louis, that I said to myself, playoffs feel close. Do you have a thought on what teams do when they're this close to the playoffs, especially against teams that they bluntly really don't like?
Yeah, you know what, it's funny you say that, because Jack and I were just talking the other day that it seems like fighting's up again. You know, fighting seems to be prevalent again, and that usually is an indication that the intensity's been ratcheted up a bit. And we've seen a few in the Oilers games lately. There was a pretty good one last night. I mean, Corey Perry took on a giant. Logan Stanley, you know, just, and he didn't have to. He could have gotten away from that. But Corey Perry's been around. He's in the grind. Exactly what you're talking about. You understand that it's starting to get down to the wire here. You're starting to get yourself mentally and physically ready to go into the playoffs and have essentially wars, you know, because that's what it is. Mm-hmm. But, excuse me, I think that teams, number one, they start to buckle down defensively. It's what every coach is preaching right now. Defense first leads to offense.
Yep.
Being harder to play against is a conversation a lot of coaches will have with media. We need to be harder to play against. This won't work down the stretch and into the playoffs.
Yep.
And quite frankly, I think what you see is the elevation. You see the elevation of the great players. You know, in this team here in Edmonton, you've seen it every year. You start to see Connor start to ratchet it up even more. You start to see him be a little more disciplined in his play. Leon Draisaitl, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Darnell Nurse, they just start to get refocused and say, okay, this is what we play for. This is what we've waited for. We still have work to do here, so let's do it properly. And I think that's what all the coaching staffs are preaching. But no question, when you have a history with a team, and the Florida Panthers last year, that was a huge upset last year in the first round of the playoffs. I think, you know, Boston went into those playoffs as a juggernaut. They went into those playoffs as a team that nobody wanted to play. And the Florida Panthers just kind of quietly went about their business at getting prepared to play that series. And then they weren't quiet in the series. It was a very physical, hard-fought series. And that's the way the Florida Panthers played. And I liken them similarly to the 2019 St. Louis Blues. You know, they were a team that when they play you, they're going to take a pound of flesh. They're going to get yep. some money. They're going to take some skin. And if you aren't ready for that kind of a battle, then they're just going to run you over. But I think the Bruins are pretty good in that kind of a battle. That's why they were up to 3-1 lead last year. They couldn't finish it off in a couple overtimes. They lost in game 7. But it was one of those series where you're like, yeah, this is going to be something that carries over. And it has. I mean, all the games this year. Now, Florida, the first couple times that Boston played them this year, were banged up. They had some injuries. They didn't have the full lineup.
Yep.
And they were still really good games. This is a Florida team that's starting to get fully at full capacity. and it's like, this is the team that people are going to be seeing, and it's going to be a battle. But Boston still found a way to win, so they have their number right now. But I think it's just going to escalate even more as the season winds down. They play each other again.
Gotcha. It all makes a lot of sense. These are the things you do. So let me get to Edmonton here. Do you have a thought on the Zach Hyman phenomenon? And make no mistake about it, this is a phenomenon. And even going into the overtime last night, you know, I think we're all saying to ourselves, well, it's going to be Zach Hyman. Like we've gone from, oh, isn't it neat how he's piling up all these goals, to, oh yeah, Zach Hyman's going to end this thing. Like, would you have a thought on all of a sudden this year in his career, he scored more than he ever has in his history, going back to when he played with, you know, Hamilton in the OJHL?
Well, here's the thing, and it's been amazing to watch him and watch how he's developed over the last few years. And it's funny because, you know, you look at a guy that comes into a team, he signs as a unrestricted free agent. Right, comes in at 29 years of age, I believe, when he signed the contract. But he played, what, 5-6 years in Toronto? 5 years, 6 years in Toronto. And he was a great player. He had a couple 20-goal seasons in Toronto. He was a great complimentary player. We always talked about his work ethic, excellent penalty killer. Work ethic is always number one. And I always go back to Hossa. You and I have talked about this, Marian Hossa. It's incredible because that was the conversation that was always brought up when we talked about Hossa, his work ethic, his backtracking, the way he stole pucks, the way he worked the corners. He was also a 40-goal scorer. He was also a guy that could punish you offensively, why he was such a coveted player. So when Zach came on board with Edmonton, you know, these are all the things you say, but then you say to yourself, well, listen, he's played with great players in Toronto, but he's playing with a different type of great players here in Edmonton. And you wonder if that chemistry is going to work. Well, there's no question the chemistry has worked, but I think what Zach has been able to do, he's a chameleon. He's been able to kind of figure it out and find what he has to do with the respective players that he's playing with. And playing with Connor McDavid, who's mainly who he's played with, he's dabbled up and down a little bit throughout the years here, but primarily it's been with McDavid as the guy that he's had the most success with. And when you look at it, McDavid can literally transport the puck up the ice himself. He needs someone to get to the net. If you look, I think it's 35 of his goals or 36 of his goals have been right around the crease area. You want to score goals in this league, go to the net. Now, I don't want to just discredit Zach, though, and say, well, he has really worked on his game, as he often does. He's got to be a better finisher. He's got confidence in his shot. He's starting to shoot the puck more. So he's morphed into that as well, understanding that it's not always okay just to give the puck back to these guys. I have to be the guy that takes the shot. And he's got a very strong, accurate shot, and he's confident with it right now. So he's letting it go. But where this started for me, Jeff, was if you go back 2 years ago in the conference final, if you go back to that playoff series, he had 11 goals in 16 games. Okay, so he had 27 in the regular season, which was a new career high for him. Now, there were shortened season in Toronto. He had 21 in over 50 games or something like that the 1 year. But then he had 27 his first year in Edmonton. And he went into the playoffs, and he had great success. He had 11 goals in 16. That was more than he had in the previous 5 seasons of playoffs in Toronto combined. Like he blew it out of the water. I think he had 1 goal in every one of those playoff series. But coming out in the playoffs carried over to the next year, too. He went into that offseason as a very confident player in his abilities to score in this league and put up 36 the next year in a career-high 83 points. So this has been building for a few years. I know everybody sees it this year and goes, oh, my God, what's he doing with 51 goals? If he wouldn't have had the 19 goals taken back last year, he might have had 45, 50 last year. I'm being a little sarcastic, but it seemed like every time he was around the net, a goal was getting taken back from him. So he would have had over 40 last year, 100%, if half of those goals would have counted. So he's been building on this for years, and now it's starting to come to fruition, and it's just, you know, it was great to see. He's a great human being. He's one of those guys that works every day. very well liked in the dressing room, very mature man that just, you know, leads by example. Mm-hmm. And you know what? He goes out there and he's having himself a year this year, which is great to see.
This is a tricky one. And, you know, the interview with Gene Principe, or the questions from Gene Principe, I think the answers anyhow, I think told an interesting story. How is Evander Kane fitting in with this team? Like, I don't think that what we saw on the bench between him and Draisaitl is a big deal at all. I just think that's a sign of two guys that are going at each other. And I think that's a sign of being healthy. But how is Evander Kane fitting into this team right now?
How did I know you were going to ask me that question? You know what? Listen, I think Evander, and listen, he's a hot button topic for a good reason. You know, like, I mean, Evander Kane is going to be very important for this team down the stretch, and he's going to be very, very important for us. You know, you go back to those playoffs 2 years ago, he had 13 goals in those playoffs. You know, he was a massive reason why they got to the conference final. He was a big piece on a team that needs their pieces to be good. And it hasn't been a great stretch for Evander. He hasn't scored in 17 games. Okay, 17 games is a career-long drought for him scoring goals. This is a guy that's used to putting the puck in the net. So, obviously, his body language isn't great. He's not happy. It was a maintenance scratch the other day. I mean, we all kind of thought, was it just maintenance or was it just a reset? You know, a reset for him just to kind of, you know, get his head clear and come back into the game. I know he's dealt with injuries over the last couple of years and aching pains and all that. We don't like to speculate, but listen, he needs to get going. I thought he had a great game last night. I thought he was back to kind of being what he needs to be. You know, he had 6 shots on net, 9 attempts. He had 4 or 5 hits. He was around it. Now, you start playing like that on a consistent basis, it's going to happen. It always has happened for him. But it's about committing to being engaged. And you hear it all the time, right? You hear it all the time with players. It starts to get into your head. You start to say, woe is me. You start to look around. You point fingers at other people. Until you look in the mirror and go out there and start buckling down and doing what you need to do, it's probably not going to change. I mean, if you're ungodly skilled like some players are that can just put the puck in the net rolling out of bed in the morning, but for the most people in the league, you have to do the things that make you successful, and you sometimes get away from them. But here's the thing. It hasn't been necessarily as smooth of a transition or a fit for Evander this year at finding that spot to plug him into where he's just been there. It's been a little bit more movement than I think he expected, and we expected, to be quite frank. I thought he was going to step in and bam, he was going to be on the line. It was going to be, okay, here's some chemistry, let it go. It hasn't worked that way. Now, I think that the roller coaster ride of the season at the start of the year played an impact on that. I think that, you know, just the way that the lines have been shuffled and lines that have had success have had an impact on that. But, you know, for me, Evander Kane is a power forward. This is what I think of Evander Kane. Excellent, straight north and south player. He's not an east and west guy. This guy goes north and south. He runs you through the end wall. He'll crush you with that speed and that physicality. Go to the net and shoot. He's a shooter. He's a bona fide shooter. I mean, he has 21 goals this year. That's no slouch, right? He's not a first power play guy. Doesn't get a whole lot in the second power play, but he's got 21 goals, right? So, I mean, you don't just pump in 21 goals in this league for nothing. So he's a natural scorer. But what he has to do is take ownership of that and keep shooting the puck. And last night, his first shift, he came over the blue line. He shot from distance. Now, that's how Darnell Nurse scored in there back in the second matchup between the two teams in the third period. He handcuffed Hellebuck and actually ended up helping them win the game 3-1 in the third period in a very tight, hard-fought game like last night was, too. So I don't know if it was by design from the coaches saying shoot it from distance. You know, if you have no play, zip it on Hellebuck, maybe a rebound. You know, we talked about that, you and I, years ago, about doing that on Grand Fuhr, right, in the playoffs against St. Louis. Because they had good defense, Prongs and McInnes. Like, when we shot the puck on Fuhrer, he'd have to deflect it to a corner. And now we maybe had a couple more steps to get a big hit on one of those defensemen. So it was kind of like, you know, that kind of mentality. But as soon as I saw that, I said, okay, good. Shot mentality. Don't be looking to pass. Don't be looking to thread a pass through 4 sticks and have a turnover. Zip it on the net because he's got a laser shot. So, you know what? It's just a matter of getting going. But they need him. I'll tell you what, Jeff, the one thing I'm 100% certain of is they need him down the stretch, and they need him in the playoffs. They need him to be that guy. He's very important. And so with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, who got off the schneid last night after not scoring in 13 games. Guys are going to have these stretches sometimes where the puck just doesn't go in the net. It just doesn't happen. And you can really quickly fall out of the habits that you do every day that make you successful. Get back to him. Get back to him. It's not that difficult. It's not rocket science, but you can make it a real big thing by getting out of sight of your head and making it something that it's not.
This is great. Big win last night for the Edmonton Oilers, 4-3 over the Winnipeg Jets in overtime. Looking forward to tomorrow night as well. The Oilers facing off against the Los Angeles Kings. Potential playoff preview there. Louis, you're the best. Thanks for talking about the Bruins and the Panthers and also the Oilers and the Winnipeg Jets and Evander Kane. Thanks as always, pal.
Thanks, Jeff. Take care, bud.
There is the great Louis DeBrusque, analyst for NHL on Sportsnet, covering the Edmonton Oilers, and of course, Hockey Night in Canada. Thanks to Louis. Thanks to Greg Wyshynski from ESPN and The Drop Podcast. Thanks to Arthur Staple from The Athletic for talking to us about the New York Rangers. The first team to officially clinch a playoff spot, Boston, can clinch tonight by taking a single point from the Tampa Bay Lightning, one of only two games on the board in the NHL. The other, the Buffalo Sabres, face off against the Ottawa Senators. You can watch that on Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. Big thanks to Matt Marchese, Lance Kennedy, and Jen Rolnick. They all did things properly. I, on the other hand, am responsible for all the mistakes over the past 2 hours. Merrick Show returns in 22 hours across the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy the games tonight. Both of them. We'll rejoin tomorrow. Have a great rest of your day.